Welcome to the One Shot Test Kitchen. Today's episode, Cyber Plus Punk. Hello everyone and welcome to the One Shot Test Kitchen where we try out and review tabletop RPGs. I am Mike Kelly and I'm joined, as always, by Samara.
Hello!
Hello. So yeah, it's been a little bit since we played it, but we are here to talk about Cyber Plus Punk, the one-shot cyberpunk RPG based on Forged in the Dark by Emmanuel Mello. And also the, you know, I'm not sure how wide-ranging the conversation will go, but also about the particular module that we played, Mind the Gap, by the same author. So yeah, with a little bit of time behind us, what are your thoughts on cyber plus punk generally?
Well, I feel like we kind of want to maybe flag early on because I do feel like there are two conversations that are worth having. One, which is cyber plus punk, and the other that has to, I think, reference and consider the Forged in the Dark system that it's built on, because that's like so much of like the rules and guides how it plays. With some of it behind me, I felt it was that Forged in the Dark system played very well, like worked well for this. I felt like the scenario that they built was tidy and fun to play in. Like it felt like a fun sandbox, but I still felt safe that I was in a sandbox. Mm-hmm. I think I said this after the gameplay. I think my only like initial reaction was like with the module than the game itself, which is like how we're pointedly put in with very little details. Mm-hmm. In something that fundamentally was built on kind of like a mystery solve, figure out what's really going on. And it would have been nice to have a little bit more of that at the start.
No, totally. So I think, honestly, that kind of dovetails with one of the things I wanted to, like, the point of, like, when I was looking at a system to play and I happened across this, the thing that really sold me was the module, mainly because Blades in the Dark is very much action focused. That system is like the game itself is like very much get into the action, flashback to stuff that you may have to cover in backstory or prep or whatever, and just go with it. And I liked how this particular setup kind of played with that in the sense of like, okay, you're supposed to start in the action, but purposely by design, you don't have any kind of context for where you are. Like you are on a train, your goal is to protect a package. That is your quote unquote reality. And then halfway through you just twist it. And you're like, oh no.
Right.
Simulacrum. And it's a really great way to, I think, kind of like that particular conceit of starting in something and like having people develop their own conceptions about what's going on. Like as they're going through the action of the story and then all of a sudden it shifts to something else, I think is a really, really powerful way to use that setup. And that's why I was like, oh shit, this sounds like kind of a perfect test case for this particular system.
Mm. Yeah. And I will agree. One of the things that we can pin and talk about later, but what you were just talking about, what it makes me think about is the level that you zoom in on any of these games. And where it encourages you, you know, to zoom in, and the value of creating the fact that we are not given information at the beginning and it twists our reality, like actually evokes that feeling in me where I didn't have to suspend my own disbelief because like I couldn't remember anything before being on this train and needing to deliver this thing. And I think that there's, again, we can get into this deeper or have this conversation now, but I think that there's like kind of two schools of thought of like how much you want to evoke or actually like almost for lack of a better term, like LARP really have an experience in a different way than like a lot of role-playing games that zoom out a little bit and you're a little bit more third person. You're a little bit less invested. You have more details that you're actively deciding your character doesn't know rather than you yourself. Does that make sense?
Talk a little bit more about that.
Like, simulating something so that I, Samara, who's playing a character, am also kind of having that revelation experience or
surprise moment
or something, rather than me knowing that, like, wait, something's off here, but my character doesn't know. So I'm role playing that my character doesn't know.
No, totally. That makes sense to me. Like, yeah, it works on both levels. Your character is taken by surprise, and the player is taken by surprise for this. Totally. This kind of setup, though, is kind of, it's, I don't think we've really experienced it in a tabletop RPG that we've played thus far, but I will say it is an extremely common kind of feeling in video games. Mm. Like, the joke, I mean, the joke in the 90s is that every JRPG protagonist had amnesia. Because, like, yeah, because you're being thrown in with no context in an attempt to get you right into the action, but, like, you don't, like, you have to piece together what's going on from context clues around you, and the main character you're playing doesn't know, like, right, what has come before. And so that, like, that's a reasonably, like, well-worn trope here, and your characters kind of had the same kind of amnesia, but, like, it's that ability to, like, immerse someone into something and, like, have you sympathize more with the character that you are playing because you both don't know what's happening.
Absolutely, yes. And I felt like this module in that design was really successful at that. And that, you know, even on the other side with me saying, oh, I wish I had more information, it's only because I think that twist was so satisfying. And there's, mm-hmm, part, there's, like, again, like, the game master in me that would have been like, oh, how would I have navigated that maze differently if I had a sense that it was something like that? But it was, you know, me, the player, actually had a really satisfying experience because it was, like, turned on its head in that way.
And that lack of context worked in its favor in that case. Absolutely. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That was the thing, is, like, I was looking for, like, stuff to play, and I saw this module and I'm like, oh shit, yes, this is a perfect way to actually, like, if it's, so the way that the, so there's a couple different ways that you can set up runs and whatnot, in the GM pamphlet for this.
Okay.
But they all kind of have the same more or less structure in terms of not quite three acts, but, like, there's three movements to the run. And it's listed here as number one, coming in hot. Number two, something unexpected occurred. And number three is logging off. Mm. But that's really, like, rising action, resolution, denouement.
Yeah.
And that is, like, for a one shot, like, in order to tell a full story, you need that kind of structure. Like, I'm thinking of some of the other modules we've played where it's just like, here's a situation.
Yeah.
And, like, navigate it how you want. Like, whereas this was like, here's a situation, here is what is going to twist it, and this is what, you know, and once you've got all that done, then the outro is based on what happened during those first two acts.
Is there a way, like, did they give you information? Could we have failed? Like, could the virus have gotten out?
Yes. So it definitely leaves open the possibility that you, once you get off the train, either through through door 12 or 22, you wake up in an underground facility. It's very much left to give the choice to the players. Like, failure and success are very much different ends of the options here. Mm. Like, so if you had gone out and, like, you know, delivered the virus to 22, you still would have woken up. You still would have, like, you would have fucked over, what did you call her? Rachel or something like that. I don't remember what you called her. You would definitely would have fucked up the neural core of the system that she was trying to protect, and you would have had to deal with the fallout from that. Mm. But the fact that you succeeded was also a valid ending to that game. Like, there's a good end and a bad end here.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I do feel like it was elegantly designed, and I will go back to what I said before, that it was a great sandbox, and for a one shot, that's what you want, you know, something that isn't going to let you go so far off the rails that you don't get the experience of, like, we told a story and it had, you know, action and all of these other events. And I do feel like the Forged in the Dark system is a great technical decision management tool to navigate through it, because I just think that, like, that system just runs really well. Mm. The D6 system where you're adding dice or subtracting dice, and, like, how you can do all that, and, like, the stress and the push stuff, like, it's a very tidy rule system that, like, I think works well, and it worked, and I think it did serve this like contained one shot.
Totally. And I do want to talk more about Forged in the Dark stuff, but there's one point I want to raise before we get into kind of the mm-hmm. nuts and bolts of that. So I want to say, like, I really enjoyed this game, this system, all that kind of stuff, because every time I feel every time I give criticism, I'm like, oh, it sucked. But but I do want to say, like, in as much as the game has a flaw, is that it leans very, very hard into the player's pre-existing knowledge of the cyberpunk realm and the cyberpunk genre.
Sure.
There are, as we discovered, there are no descriptions for the skills.
Right.
Like, what is rigging versus piloting? Like, what is rigging versus hacking? What is survival? Like, that stuff is not, like, you kind of have to interpret that to a certain extent there. And I think that, like, I like it because I like cyberpunk. Like, I like the genre of, you know, everything, you know, Snow Crash, Neuromancer, like, all that kind of stuff. But I feel that, like, if you are not well versed in that, then you, or your players are not, then I think there may be either an emphasis on the GM to actually paint this scene a little bit more in depth, but, like, there's so much that's involved with kind of the thematic elements of cyberpunk that I don't know if you can actually do that in a single session. And I think that also that if the players don't know, and I think like one of our players, probably Tim, did not quite grasp like the full like breadth of cyberpunk. Like he knew like kind of the broad brush strokes, but not necessarily about like, he never played Shadowrun or something like that.
Sure.
So
I mean, he didn't quite know about it.
Yeah. But you're familiar with like the cyberpunk genre.
Yeah, I mean, tangentially. I mean, what I'll say, what I think is the benefit of that is, I think whenever you play very specific genre fiction, it will inevitably both potentially alienate people, and also you'll have people who come from it from like very different, but like fervent ideas in the same, right? That could be sword and sorcery, that could be cyberpunk, that could be any, you know, kind of,
sure,
you know, samurais. I think that what it allows, the way that they design the system by giving you a specific name and some other ones that you that feel like are no question, you know what they are. And it allows for us to have a dialogue and build our cyberpunk world as we describe it, right? Where it was like coming up with your implants that you have or your augments, you know, that was an opportunity to kind of define this world and like how people move around in it. I felt like your sound design did a great job. Like, honestly, a sound clip in a moment, I was like, oh, right. Okay. Both the voice and what they're doing to it with a little bit of your descriptions, all of a sudden I felt like I knew where we were and what things were going on. And again, I felt empowered to declare how things were. And like, trust that, you know, you'd push back if it was like crazy. If I was like, okay, now I conjure my like elephant and
in my back.
But you know, there was like a mutual respect of like, okay, well, I'm going to try it. And then I felt like it could have gone further. Like maybe we as players could have gone there further in our explanation of it. But like, you know, it was a world where a bruiser would fight like a tough 9-year-old with maybe some good augments and, you know, all these different things. So I felt like it was an interesting opportunity to engage with having that lack of detail.
I guess maybe I'm being a little snobbish about it in terms of my interest in cyberpunk, but like the big thing about cyberpunk to me is kind of the societal and like power dynamics within a society and within a political state that kind of like how that's turned into tools of oppression. And how, like, the underclass lives in such a world that is utterly dominated by it and all that. Like, that kind of thematic resonance is what really resonates with me. Whereas this seemed more aesthetic. I mean, by necessity, you can't get into these themes in a one-shot.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, precisely. Like, there was no room in a one-shot to, like, deal with the social complexities of the cyberpunk world. But I think that's... I hear your point that they definitely took the aesthetic and ran with it. And it made you realize like, oh, actually what I like about the cyberpunk world is like this other kind of conversation that happens, which if you were doing a Blade style campaign in a cyberpunk setting would actually, I think, work pretty well.
Oh, I 100% agree. And I do know that there are, I'm not sure where it stands, but I know that I believe I read an interview where they're trying to expand a kind of the system to kind of Blades in the Dark, but cyberpunk. I think it's like, or there is a Forge in the Dark system that I believe is cyberpunk. Is it? Yeah, I mean, they have a couple of different like notable Forge in the Dark system. Scum and Villainy is what I'm thinking of, but that's more Star Wars than that.
Yeah, okay.
Than anything else. But yeah, I mean, I do think that like the cyber plus punk system would fit incredibly well, like to a longer term campaign. Like it is like you're going on jobs, you're going on runs. Like that is almost an exact parallel to the Blades in the Dark system, where you're a bunch of people doing heists or jobs. Or something like that. Scores,
yeah,
I think is the word.
So did these designers have like of like a bunch of one shots that you could get, or did they just do the system in the one shot?
So my understanding is, and I'm not sure of the full time on here, the system came out relatively recently, within the last year or two. They recently ran a Kickstarter for what's called a Cyber Plus Punk Augmented.
Okay.
Which is it's basically kind of a version 2. Like there's some more rules around like equipment, advancement, things like that are sure. meant to kind of push it out a little bit more into kind of a longer term gaming system.
Mm-hmm.
And as part of that, they started releasing modules. This was one that was released with it, Mind the Gap. There's some others that have like other trappings around them. I think there's one that is, I think it's called like Predator. And it might actually just be based on the idea of Predator, where you're fighting something like an invisible cyborg or something like that.
Yes.
But like there are like the modules that I have seen have been incredibly well crafted. And, like they're great one shots in terms of like setting these things up. But I think Augmented is meant to be a more pulled out system, so you can actually have multiple sessions with the same characters.
Got it. Now, I find one of the challenges with one-shots are how easy – what your touchstone anchors are to characters in the world and how quickly you can jump into it. And we talked a little bit about how its structure allowed for that with the sort of like amnesia rule for like getting in the world and not asking questions and being like, okay, let's just get into it. Did you feel like the character creation, the character sheets, and you know, that allowed the players, like from a DM's perspective, like how did you feel about the characters that we fleshed out? Like, did they go a direction you expected? Were they more fleshed out, less fleshed out?
I find it curious you're asking me that instead of me asking you that, because like you were the ones that were creating characters.
Sure. I mean, I'm happy to give my perspective as well, but I just from an outside, like, did you feel like?
So, I mean, I felt the characters were a little thin. In some ways.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know necessarily if that's a product of the character creation or the fact that they are like, we didn't spend enough time with them with their inner lives and inner thoughts and stuff like that.
Right.
I mean, like Bulldog was a meathead. Like it was pretty like, as soon as that character was created, like, oh yeah, he's that. It's very easy to work in stereotype there. Your character, Sean Young, doesn't fit easily into stereotype or even like cyberpunk like class or something like that. So I guess how would you describe, what was the concept for that? And like how, like, or did you have one?
No, definitely not. I picked a name of the actress from Blade Runner and I was like, okay, it was a character that came out of the skills rather than a concept for a character. So I was like, okay, well, I'm incredibly cautious. I scan a lot of situations. I have these eye implants. So like, how do you move about the world if the things that you've prioritized are like not fighting, you know, to get your way through something, but like having all the information and like enough so that I could get a deal on those implants and that like, you know, I try to stay, you know, whatever. And so that created tension with a meathead because I wanted, you know, information and he just wanted to act for sure. And so, yeah. And then like, so I didn't feel, and I think it's probably why my instinct to still give that, like to hammer back to that feedback of like, I wish I knew a little bit more going in because it's almost impossible to have, you kind of can't win because if you spend a lot of time in character creation, giving Sean Young a ton of backstory and I know who she is, then you've given me a false promise that in this module, I'm even going to use that because it doesn't come up at all. It's not engaged with. It would only inform how I moved about this. And I'd maybe be like upset that I was like, oh, we're directly in combat. And I created this whole harrowing story of how I got eye implants or something and take down the man.
Yeah.
But also I think that it was really fun to kind of come into character because I felt like by the end, I felt like I had a sense of who this character was.
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
And
like given a chance to put them in, like, what's the old sayings? Like, if you want to learn who someone is, put them in a bad situation and they'll show you who they are.
Yeah, exactly. So I felt like her edges got a little bit more refined and all of that. And so I would argue that that's also a really lovely experience as a player for a one shot to be like, instead of starting with a character that, you know, by the end of this one shot, you'll have like chipped away and created a character. There's the opportunity for those interactions to be able to do that. And it was a really satisfying experience. There's two different like schools of acting theory. One of them is that like, you know, conjure the memories. It comes from an internal place and it comes out. And another school is like, no, if you just physically make yourself laugh or you slam a table, like the anger will come through your performance that way. So outside in or inside out. And it was fun to play a game where it was a character was like, yeah, no, you just play the game. And by the end of, you know, the module, they'll have been developed. It was different, but I felt like it worked.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, again, with this game's kind of emphasis on everything revolving around the run, everything revolving around the action, character is, like, that's the only way the character can develop, I think.
Mm-hmm.
You need to have some kind of initial character creation, obviously, to determine, like, you know, the broad strokes. But I think, yeah, like, the fact that it was able to do that, I think, is kind of impressive. But I also wonder, I guess maybe we saw a little bit of an arc for someone like a bulldog. I don't know so much about Ash, but like, I wonder how much of that is player dependent and what you're bringing to the, but maybe that's an unfair way to put it. Not so much player dependent, but also like expectation setting as you go for the players as they go into this game. You need to tell them like, okay, you're going to create the characters, broad strokes. Like, you'll figure out who they are as they play. Like, one of the tenets of Blades in the Dark is play to find out what happens.
Yeah.
And that is also written in the Cyber Plus Punk GM pamphlet. GM protocols. Convey a vibrant world with neon lights, loud music, greedy corpse, high tech, and low life. Provide opportunities and play to find out, and then build upon their choices and follow the fiction. Like, that's almost lifted, like, verbatim from Blades in the Dark.
Mm-hmm.
I think maybe pushing that maybe a bit forward and telling the players a certain extent of that, mm-hmm. like, you know, play to see what happens, play to see who you are,
mm-hmm.
Like, might be a good way to, like, oh, I don't know who I am when I start this. I will hopefully find out by the end.
Definitely. I think that you maybe as a player would feel like you had more agency to really go there and, like, try on different clothes, so to speak, and be like, does this feel right for that character? Oh no, like, okay, does that, and you know, just take it and run with it. I mean, and again, yeah. I'm not sure that you need to have like an arc, but I did appreciate that the only real scene we had to have with like an NPC that dealt with who we are and how we would navigate those interactions came at the very end, where we had the chance as players to figure out our group dynamic. Because I also find the thing that was frustrating about a lot of RPGs where you've got a party is that the first scene is often, and you're in a tavern and somebody comes with something. And it's like, you don't really know what your group dynamics are yet. And you're either supposedly been together a long time, or even if you use the conceit of like, oh, you've all just been hired, you don't know each other. Like, it's a weird front loading of information. And again, to your point about like the fundamentals of what the Forge in the Dark system is, I felt like this module did a good job and reminded me, as like somebody who loves these games, to be like, yeah, this is the other way actually to engage with this and backload it, and just like actually not even backload it, just create it together and more organically.
Yeah, 100%. I think it is kind of a, I mean, I understand the you know, the Blades in the Dark system is like, the actual Blades of the Dark system is geared around like a group of people that go on these like various different missions and runs and scores and whatnot together. But I wonder if the pure expression of it is the one shot, like, because you do, I mean, because it is very cinematic, it is very like collaboratively built and whatnot, but also very kind of tied around a specific situation or event. And it's probably something that is, I don't mean this to sound reductive, but like, it is a good like 2-hour jaunt in the movie theater.
Mm-hmm.
This is going to be a weird comparison, but it's top of my mind because I just saw it. Everything, Everywhere, All at Once. Did you see it?
I saw it opening weekend.
Yeah. No, it is a great movie. I'm not going to spoil anything about it, but like, that is a great just absolute whirlwind of stuff that just happens in that very limited time frame with these people that are introduced, developed and whatnot over the course of 2 hours or so, which is more or less how long we played Cyber Plus Pong. Mm-hmm. And then it ends, and like that situation is resolved. I don't really want to see a sequel to that. Like, you know, it's very much like it's a great experience. I'm glad I had it. And like,
I think I hear that, and I would agree to an extent, but just say that I think a campaign version of this system or these games should be thought of more as like either or, and I don't think that Blades is set up to do this. The way to think about it, if you were going to build something on a Forged in the Dark system that was also campaigny or more of a campaign, would be to think of it as more as like episodic television. Like Black Mirror, where it's just like, well, it's all, you know, it's in the same world, but it's different, you know, director, or Mandalorian, where it's like, well, it's the same thing, but different directors, or you see different people, or, you know, I think the game Monster of the Week or something like is maybe in that vibe. But anyways, I think that you can play a campaign in a world and still have that, leaning on what I think it does well, which is give you a very entertaining, tidy 2.5 hour run. But if you were in a world that you really loved, that there would be nothing, it'd be interesting if there was a mechanic that was like more about helping the world grow and less about like characters leveling up, if that makes sense.
Making the world grow in terms of like world building, you mean?
Yeah, like persistence. Like if the world is persistent, but the characters aren't necessarily persistent, it might be fun to return.
Oh, I see. Way. Almost like the Cyber Plus Punk
MCU, you know,
cinematic universe.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Basically.
I don't know. I can certainly see the case for both. Like, you know, there's value in like kind of a longer, like a series of like, maybe we were talking about this briefly before, but like, you know, getting people together to play this thing. Like if you can't keep a regular campaign going, like, you know, once every other week or something like this, maybe you do this once a month or once a quarter and you bring back those old hands and like, oh, we're going to create another entry in this anthology series that we've done.
Right.
Totally. I could see that. That actually sounds kind of okay.
Well, you know me, I love to, you know, add a insert rule set on any game I play.
No, totally. All right, let's take a quick break and we will be right back with more of our thoughts. And we're back. So I wanted to talk a little bit about some of the stuff mechanically. Because I think, like, it is Forged in the Dark. It is based on the Blades in the Dark system. And, there's a lot of similarities, but they do make certain kind of changes or alterations or hacks to the system to make it a little bit more. And the thing that kind of struck me was that it sort of tied into some of the broader stuff I've been talking about. And, like, from a cyberpunk point of view, they kind of throw a lot at you. Everything is geared around the action roll. Like, that is the main form of interaction that the player has with the world. Mm-hmm. Or the character has with the world, I should say. Everything is mediated. Like, every action you want to take in the world is mediated between that, with one or two exceptions, like the take a break thing or whatnot. Mm-hmm. I found that, like, the process of getting to the role or the action had a lot of inputs to it in terms of trying to, like, determine dice pools and things like that.
Yeah.
So, for example, what is the attribute you're using or approach you're using, I should say, the skill you're using? Then are you using an augment? Is that augment glitchy? Who has edge? What's the difficulty? What's the effect that can expect of this? Do you want to raise it, lower it? All that kind of stuff. You have to go through that whole process. And, like, we elided a good chunk of that because sometimes just straight up, like, you know, I don't think we once used the like raise or lower the difficulty of the role,
right?
Because there's a lot that goes into that, and it does, I think, sometimes get in the way of kind of this fast moving action that the game wants to evoke. We're in a firefight, and Bulldog wanted to finally use his special grenade, his like incendiary grenade. It's like, okay, it's a big firefight. You're stuck behind behind cover. You can see a couple of them. What are you going to do? I'm going to throw a grenade. Okay. what approach you want to use, what, you know, what skill do you want to use? Okay, great. You're using this item. Okay. Are you using an augment to like augment like the adrenaline to kind of give you an edge here? Who has edge here? Cause you're behind cover. I guess you have edge cause they can't see it. Then like, okay, like that's great. What's the difficulty? Okay. Do you want to raise and lower the difficulty? But you go through all of that and then you get to the action part, which is the thing that like you just want to interact with and you want to do it. That I felt it was like held behind too many layers of numbers to a certain extent. I felt that kind of not like utterly, like it's not a fatal flaw per se, but no. It is something that I'm like, okay, if you wanted to interact here, like what's the sequence here?
Well, I think what happens when there's the one main way to resolve it, but the one main way to resolve it is like a laundry list that you have to get through.
Mm.
It does, to your point, like fuck with the momentum. And so
yes.
If you, especially because we would fall into this pattern that we'd basically all tell you what we wanted to do and then went through a series of each one taking turns setting up those roles. And I found as a player, I had to very consciously on the other side of that, like say something or do something that felt like recapped all that math we did and reminded us like who we were as players and why we were there and what story we were telling. I don't know if like we in concert with you played it a little bit differently so that it wasn't so much like stacking up a queue of actions and then resolving those actions. But if we were more like, I'm doing this. Okay, great. I'm doing this now. And then, you know, you move on and you tell a story. It's more integrated in the storytelling. Maybe it would have felt different, but I feel that because the number of steps you had to go to resolve it, it was never going to be that way. And that we kind of naturally fell into that pattern because it was like, okay, well, we know we're going to have to stop to do all that math. So let's just like say what we're doing and then just do the math.
Yeah. I mean, like part of the problem is that, again, when you're dealing with an action scene like that, there's a lot happening all at the same time. Even just figuring out order of operations and whatnot. And it's like, it made me appreciate initiative systems a little bit to a certain extent.
Yeah, I mean, hats off to you as the GM for running this because it really does pop you into like the most GM heavy part of GMing with the combat.
Yeah. Yeah. Managing, well, not even just combat, but managing an active situation.
Yes.
Like, but I think that's like, but this game is all about active situations. Like Blades in the Dark is all about active situations and things like that. The problem is like there were times where it's just like absent a system that allowed the GM to dictate, okay, who's going now? Like I had to kind of mentally like, okay, based on how I'm viewing the action, which I don't know if I'm communicating well, I think this person would kind of have the first action here.
Mm-hmm.
And like, this leads to situations where I kind of have to resolve that while Bulldog is in the background saying, I shoot him, I shoot him, I shoot him. Like, you know, it's like, okay, like, I know you want to do that, but like, Bulldog is a boy of action. Like, he understands that, like, he's like, he has one response, hit it with his head. So I understand we're getting to that, but I need to have stuff happening around the edges so it's not just a pure you shoot, you miss, you shoot, you miss kind of situation.
Yeah.
And yeah, as a GM, it's hard to like not only regulate players' turns, but also create a narrative that follows like that describes everything that's happening at in the moment to a certain extent.
Right.
And I don't know if this is necessarily a fault of the system or of my own like DMing style or something like that.
Well, and also the player's familiarity with it too, right? Because this is true in any system. You can get into a D&D game where somebody who's unfamiliar with their character, when it comes their turn to do something, they just like, it's so much more of a conversation rather than somebody who's very familiar with their character and the system. And you just trust that they're like, I do this thing. And then they roll and then they tell you, I succeed, you know, or they tell you in this system, I have to tell you the number because you, you know, help figure out the resolution on that. But there was so much conversation about what was rolled. And, you know, if the players trusted themselves and you could trust the players to do it right, then there could be a way that it's not as clunky, that I just know that those are the things, I'm using my goggles, I'm being dexterous about it, and I'm this, and so I know that I roll this many dice, and I just roll them.
Yeah, but I mean, I mean, the way that the action roll is set up is like, you declare what you're using, then I declare the difficulty. So if you're trying to shoot someone with aggression, that may be a little bit more, like, more effect heavy than something if you're trying to shoot it with, like, observation or something. Like if you're taking a snipe. Is like
Right. So there's this
there has to be a back
check,
and forth.
Right. Which is weird, you know, and going back to our bocce days, there is a way that you can make that building of storytelling feel really satisfying.
Totally.
But there are other times where it feels like it's just like this clunky box you have to check of, like, you know, asking permission. Can I do this? How hard is it? You know, it doesn't feel like we're building a world together. It just feels like I'm checking against you and you're, you know, raising a bar, or lowering it.
I mean, it feels kind of appropriately for a cyberpunk game. It feels almost like computer-like.
Mm-hmm,
like, they input, then the output, then the input off of that output, and then, like, okay, we finally reach a collective output. It's almost like a function in, like, a JavaScript program or something like that.
I mean,
while that might be thematically, like, close, it felt, again, very much like, okay, here's, like, a 5 to 6 minute pause where we try to figure out what we're rolling and what the effect's going to be and all that kind of stuff. Then we get back to the action. It's like cutting away to, like, I know, like a stuntman describing what he's about to do. Kind of thing. But yeah, I mean, there's some other stuff that was kind of like, I hope some of the stuff, just, I hope that there's like the new version, the Cyberpunk Augmented, kind of fleshes out some of the stuff. Because there were a couple of concepts that weren't really used per se, like, hunted. What does hunted mean? It's open to interpretation to a certain extent, but
I figured that if anybody was hunted, that then that meant that at any point in the one shot, that there could be basically, I figured that you had somebody on standby that you got to throw in and be like, if we felt like we were, you know, doing something too loudly or, you know, too obviously, that somebody could come in and, you know, screw us up, that we'd be on the radar of somebody. It's like in the Blade system when you're, what is that, your reputation or something? Like,
well, I mean, there isn't really a hunted mark in Blades as far as I can tell.
No, it's like, no, but it feels like in my mind I equated hunted in this game with, like, you know, bad rep with the blue coats in Blades. Was that, I was like, oh, I'm sure Michael throw some assassin at us if I'm hunted and I, like, am being an asshole through this game. And he's like, you know what? You're hunted. So here you go. But I agree with you. It's not clear at all.
Yeah. And I'm not knocking it too much because, like, you know, I think in maybe in a different kind of one shot that might've come into play more often.
Yeah.
I wish there was a little bit more guidance here. The only guidance really given in the GM thing is, like, asked about their take note of the PC's angles and hunted statuses, ask them about enemy gangs, corpse, allies, use those to make the run personal. That's all it really says. And I'm like,
this one shot did not allow for any of that to be incorporated.
It really didn't. I mean, so that's why I kind of left it alone. Maybe in a different run that would happen, but I'm not 100% sure.
Yeah.
So all this is also kind of getting into kind of in as much as I have an overall take of this thing is that, like, I think the Forged in the Dark system, I think, serves this game well, but I it's not its strength per se. We'll see what happens with, like, an augmented release or something like that. I think its true strength is its aesthetic. I think its true strength is, like, the ability to paint a world. And, like, everything about this game leans into it. Like, I don't know if you saw, like, the mock-ups of what the actual character pamphlets look like.
Yeah.
They are fucking gorgeous.
Yeah,
like, definitely. I mean, like, I want to, like, get them just to fucking, like, put in, like, a frame on my wall, kind of thing. And also, like, the aesthetic, like, even extended to stuff like the audio clips.
Yeah, like, very again, impressive.
Like, they're very well done, and they're just like, okay, this is meant to evoke a certain kind of soundscape and, like notion of being in, like, you know, a sense of place that I think that this really, really does try to evoke.
Mm-hmm. And succeeds.
I think to a certain extent, yeah. I mean, again, like, there comes a point, I think, where you need to know some of the vocabulary around cyberpunk in order to, like, fully lean into the system.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I think that is like, that's going to be a certain barrier for some players because they don't have the experience with cyberpunk.
Yeah, well, I mean, it feels like it's a, you know, one shot for fans of the genre. And, you know, if I was more, you know, it's almost like a fanfic feeling of like, yeah, if you have so much knowledge that you can bring into this, this is an incredible system with which you can like lay those ideas on. And it gives you just enough, you know, to lean on and still be nimble. But if you're coming at it with little to no perspective on this world and this genre, then it doesn't give you so much to run on. And what it does provide is like really great. Like you, everything you laid out as the aesthetics, I absolutely agree. Design-wise, sound design-wise, all great. But if I don't have anything, if I didn't like do my homework, so to speak, then like that can only carry me so far.
Yeah.
And yeah. So I do think it's some, it's one that would... For both character development and world development and senses of immersion, I do think that it's a one-shot and a system that benefits from having some previous knowledge. Because I would agree, like my experience as somebody who's not so versed in that world was like, it was fun, it was a romp, but I'm not sure that I felt like I went to some of the most boring references with like Blade Runner and The Matrix.
But the thing is like that I think is going to be the touchstone for a lot of like, no offense intended, normies. I think it's going to be like when you ask
people, we're normies for not being into it. Like, what do you call yourselves? That
No. I'm not saying you're a normie. I'm saying for the normies, those are probably going to be the chief.
Okay.
The chief touch points. Like, whereas I'm going to bring in something like Neuromancer, and I'm going to bring in something like, I don't know. I guess Dark City is not really punkish enough, but like
Jackknife 79.
That's one I don't know.
Oh, yeah. I just made up a cyberpunk name being like, I bet I could make up what these cyberpunk names are like. It's not anything.
Okay. So that's not a real one.
No. It's not a real one. I just was throwing it out. Because to me, you're throwing out these things where I'm like, yeah, sure. Neuromancer. Yeah, sure. Like they don't mean to me. They sound like, you know, crazy titles. So I just threw out a crazy title in response.
Wait, have you never read Neuromancer?
No.
Oh, good God. Okay.
I know, dude. It's shameful.
Okay. Well, all right. Maybe you're proving my point for me here. but yeah, no. And again, I'm not judging or whatnot. Like, you know, it's not everybody's like, you know, cup of tea. I completely understand that.
Yeah. Or you just haven't been exposed to it, or you've made different nerd priorities. That's fine.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know. Again, like part of the problem that I think can happen sometimes with cyberpunk stories is that like the aesthetics are cool. Like, you look at something like a, The Matrix is very aesthetic. Matrix has a very distinct look to it. That has been aped without, like, the carrying over of any of the themes in that. And, like, I'm not sure what thematic angle this is going for. I mean, this is, like, maybe there's some element of, like, you know, reality is not as it seems, which is kind of a common one in cyberpunk or something like that. But, like... I feel that like that is like the thematic part is not the strength of this. Again, maybe because of its length, who knows? But I think it is very much the aesthetic part of it, which is fine. Like sometimes I just like a little like, you know, I don't know if it technically qualifies, but something like a RoboCop has like cyberpunk elements to it that borrows on the aesthetic. True.
It does. Yeah.
So like, I mean, and that's a fun little ramp.
Yeah. I mean, it's none of the, it's some of the themes of cyberpunk.
Yeah. Like where does the man and the machine begin and nature of memory? And yeah, totally. Yeah. I guess that's true.
I mean, it's not a masterpiece of, you know, cyberpunk genre fiction, but like RoboCop is cyberpunk.
Not. Yeah, no, totally.
Now I want the RoboCop one shot. Like if you're going to give me a Predator one shot, give me a RoboCop or Terminator. I'd do a Terminator too.
I don't know what that would look like. I don't know. I'm not disagreeing. I'm just not 100% sure what that would actually be. all right. I think we're kind of at the, if we're talking about like other shit now, I think maybe we've reached the end of like,
doing the normal thing where we spin off and say, okay, if you were going to play this again, what, you know, story would you want to tell in this world? Would you play this again?
I would 1000% play this again. I wonder if I would, so they actually have like stuff in the GM systems, like, very similar to Blaze in the Dark, where, like, you know, here's a 1-6 thing of, like, the objective, the who sent you on this mission, the location where it is, what the payload is, or something like that. So you can create your own runs. I would probably want to play another pre-made. Like, I feel like that, like, like, or, you know, maybe I hunker down and I'm like, I get a really good idea and I like sculpt out a particular pre-made that I want to make or something like that. So
What would you change? What would you change in the running of it the next time?
I mean, my changes would largely be around the concept, kind of like thematically, like the kind of like fiction I am drawn to creating is not like reality is a myth. Kind of stuff. That's not my kind of thing. So I would probably go for a different thematic thing. So I would honestly go for something about like more leaning into augmentation and like, you know, the difference between like what kind of person augments themselves, why do they do it and stuff like that. Like that idea is very, very fascinating to me. So, but that's more or less it.
I said just a dash of body horror.
To a certain extent. Yeah, I do guess I can see the new Cronenberg too.
Did you see it?
I did not. I need to. Crimes of the Future. No. That's a cyberpunk ass name. I'll say that much.
That is a cyberpunk ass name. Better than Jackknife 79. Okay. Sorry. Would I play it again?
Would you play it again? Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I've played we are running this Blades campaign off pod and we just played this. I've played a lot of the Blade system. I'd be curious to find a Forged in the Dark to run. And this one was really cool. I think we made the point that I don't have the references necessarily to do that in the most satisfying way for either the players or for myself. So I would play again if someone was running a game for sure, because it was really fun and I definitely enjoyed it. And I'd have fun fleshing out and exploring in that world with other people. But I am really kind of hungry that if I do play the Forged in the Dark or Blades in the Dark again, that I think I want to be a DM at this point. Because I'd be curious to see what it feels like on the other side of the table.
Yeah, I mean, and there's no shortage of systems that use Forged in the Dark.
Doesn't Monster Hearts? Is Monster Hearts the apocalypse system, or is it, I don't know, is powered by the apocalypse, or I feel like it's based on one of the systems.
It's powered by the apocalypse.
Okay.
Yeah. No, there's Forged in the Dark stuff that, like, one thing I really, really like, just kind of as a brief aside, like, kind of the, like, mentality of, like, 1/7 games and John Harper games, like, here are the systems, use them as you will, like, make something cool with it. I really, really love that, that philosophy, because that's how you get really cool stuff.
Yeah, I was telling you that I listened to a really great interview with him, and his game theory was Third Floor Wars interview. And yeah, I mean, like, he listening to the way that he talks about it, it's exactly like what you said. It was like, well, why not? People are going to make their own mods anyways, so why not encourage that in the way that, like, I think a lot of games, what video games have done this, the like Steamforge stuff and like all of the Elder Scrolls content that people have like built out and created and done all that, you know, The Sims famously. I just think it's fun. I think it's fun when designers are just like, yeah, also like the toolbox is kind of what's fun about this. So
yeah. To a large extent.
Take the tools. Like, I don't need to lock up the tools. Like,
yeah. Like, and like, also, like, explicitly, you can profit off of these.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like you can support yourself theoretically or in some small way if this thing takes off. Cyberpunk is for sale. Like, and like, the enhanced stuff is for sale. It is a, and like, you know, again, with a more tighter IP, like, that wouldn't be happening. Like, yeah. Who knows what if it even would have been developed. So
No, it's really cool.
Yeah.
And it's an exciting community. Like, I always think it's fun to then be like, well, the one thing, like, to see how far reaching a community can go. Be like, well, the seed is that you guys are all using these tools, but man, what people do with it. That's
1,000%. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, awesome. Thanks for finding it and running it, Mike. It was definitely a fun one.
Yeah, yeah. It was my pleasure.
One final question I thought was that we've been playing a lot of two-player games, and we had a big, this was like a three players and you on, how did you feel playing that? Well, I mean, we're still all online digitally, so we're not in person. Like, how was running a game that big online?
That might have contributed to some of the like cacophony and confusion when I'm trying to resolve things. Like, it's like, there's like audio lag, video lag, and all that kind of stuff, certainly to a certain extent. But like, I do miss like big raucous big sessions like that to a certain extent. Like, The way I kind of I analogize it is like sometimes I like going out to like a restaurant and having dinner when it's just myself. Mm-hmm. But sometimes I like going out with like seven people and just fucking like conversation flowing and just having a good time and like all that kind of stuff. They're very different experiences and I like them both. Mm-hmm. And it's nice to have one of those experiences with like a bunch of people, especially like, you know, people I'm friends with. So,
yeah, friends are great.
Yes, friends are great. That's our motto. All right, I think that's all for Cyber Plus Punk. If you are interested in getting this, you can find it on itch.io. And thank you for listening. If you like what we do here, don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review this pod on your podcast service of choice. And if you have any comments or questions for us, or if you have a suggestion for games we should take on in the future, please drop us a line at ostkpodcast and follow us on Twitter at ostkpodcast. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Bye.
And we're back. Yes. What?
I'm just excited to be back.
Okay. Stepping on my intro. God damn
it,
Summer.
Go ahead. Start over. Go back. That's the outtake. We found the outtake.